following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody's doing well. We started off with some rain, good bit of it over the last couple of days. Right now, it's just cloudy, but we're going to get some more rain here over the next few days. As a matter of fact, I was looking, and the next day that there's not a decent chance of rain is Saturday. So we may get a good bit more rain. But I've mentioned this a couple of times. I got some. Had to get some sod replaced, so I don't mind.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot better than adding to the water bill. But, yeah, welcome in, everybody. Hope you're doing all right here on this hump day Wednesday. Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser is alongside here this afternoon. Adam, how you doing?
Doing all right. It's I hope there's less of the rain storms and the puddles in front of my apartment. But other than that, I mean, it's honestly, I don't know. I like this weather a lot.
I don't mind it. I don't mind it at all.
No.
I mean, if I really had something that I really wanted to do or was planning on doing outside, I'd be a little bummed.
Yeah.
But no, it's not bad. I mean, it's good weather to, get a little, if you need to get some something done inside or read or nap. It has been
very good napping weather. There have been a couple of those.
So. Oh, man. No question about it. It's sort of, I mean, we're about to be in the slow time here. I mean, you've got the College World Series is getting closer to its championship participants. West Virginia trying to rally against North Carolina. It's 12-7 Tar Heels in the bottom of the eighth. So just four outs left for the Mountaineers, but Carolina close to being able to move on to the championship. And then a little later on, Georgia has to beat Oklahoma tonight. And then if they do that tomorrow to be able to get to the championship series.
Not the expectation for that side of the bracket.
No, not
whatsoever.
At all. Man, Oklahoma has been just they have been on fire and just really, really – the surprise, I would think, here of the College World Series.
I can't imagine what going to Atlanta and doing what they did against that Georgia Tech team.
Yep.
I can't imagine what that does for momentum and confidence sake. And it seems like you're really seeing it in Omaha up to this point for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question about it. I mean, Georgia eliminated Texas last night. And those were the two teams that most people felt were the most likely to win it. And Georgia's big-time uphill battle, we were talking about it yesterday. I mean, they've got to win like 5 games in 6 days to be able to try to win a title here. I mean, they've got to win tonight, tomorrow, and then take two, most likely from North Carolina, to be able to win.
Man, that regional structure is just so, I don't know. It feels like there needs to be a solution to it. I wish I knew what that solution was, but it's just so. I know it's obviously not a regional, but that first round of the College World Series where it is set up like another regional.
It's basically two regionals. Are you one that would be for a reseeding?
I don't know about reseeding, but I just think there's got to be a different way to set up that regional. Naturally, I haven't spent much time sitting down and looking at it to be like, that's the way it should be done. But it's just the fact that if you're coming out of that loser's bracket, it's such a climb.
Oh,
I don't know. I mean,
that's just part of it. It's critical that you especially don't lose your first game.
Right. That's the inverse of it, which like I see that side too, and I think that's fair enough. It's just one of those things where, I mean, just to see how much you can wind up taxing on your pitching is, I just wonder if there's something else sometimes.
And the thing is, I think it's much better than if you just had eight teams in a single elimination.
Yeah.
I mean, then it's one bad game and that's it.
Yeah, especially with how baseball is. No, mm-hmm. they don't pay me enough to figure out that problem. So
yeah, I'm not one for reseeding. I mean, I feel like if you win a regional and a super regional, yeah, then more power to you, and you deserve to be, you know, even if you were a lower seed such as Troy was, to be able to get there. And you shouldn't be penalized, I don't think, for not having been a high seed.
Yeah, no, I definitely, like, that's kind of where I'm at as far as reseeding goes. I just, I don't know, someday down the line, somebody will do it ages from now, and they'll tinker with that regional structure. But, yeah, I don't know what the answer is, but it's just one of those things where every time I see that, it's just kind of like, that is such a long hole to climb out of.
Oh, you're not kidding. So, I mean, again, Oklahoma with a great opportunity. If they can win, you know, either tonight or tomorrow, of course, they'd love to go ahead and do it tonight and have a little more time to get everybody ready for the championship series. And again, as I said, North Carolina just, I guess it's three outs away now as we're in the top of the ninth, with North Carolina leading West Virginia by the score of 7-2. Speaking of college baseball, might as well stick with that for a little bit. Auburn added another player from the through the transfer portal, another pitcher, a righty. And this guy looking like a bullpen piece for Butch Thompson for next year.
Yeah, no, Corey Kling out of Arizona. I really like, you look at the numbers on paper and there are some things that stick out, but I know you and I were talking about it a little bit before we went on. Like, I think the most impressive thing to me beyond the strikeout to walk ratio being 43-9 last year is pretty mm-hmm. good. But in 19 appearances all out of the bullpen, 12 of them were scoreless, and that made up, I did the math on it earlier, I think that made up about 72% of his innings last year. So mm-hmm. You've got, you know, to go out and add depth to this bullpen, I think is something that you needed to do. And the fact that you've managed to do that up to this point with a couple of arms, I think you're feeling pretty good about what you've added in the portal to this point.
Yeah, thus far, a couple of pitchers, an infielder and an outfielder.
Mm-hmm. I think the one thing you'd love to see is a little more proven of a bat,
mm-hmm.
but that's not to say. I mean, that Ben Swales kid from Iowa was fascinating to look at because
his numbers are really good.
His numbers were so good.
Not a ton of at bats.
Yeah, which I don't know if that's maybe.
Did they hit the ball that well that they didn't need a guy that hit 300 with some pop?
I feel like we would have heard more about Iowa.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know if it was that or injury. I probably need to do some reading myself, but. No, like, if you can get a jump from him, or I think it was John Beverly from Georgia State,
mm-hmm,
great.
Right.
But if you could go out and add just, like, one real proven bat.
I think you need somebody with some real pop from
yeah,
the right side.
That would be a luxury to be able to take into next year, knowing you've got that for a fact.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but so far, I mean, it's, you know, not a ton of guys getting added, but still, I think Auburn, you're feeling pretty good so far.
And you haven't lost anybody who you were really, really counting on heavily next year.
Right. I mean, by the time it all settled, you know, Bristol Carter was kind of more of a platoon thing, it felt like, going
mm-hmm.
on. And beyond that, I think it's four or five other pitchers who were freshmen or redshirt freshmen
right.
last year. So, you know, you're feeling pretty good. The big pieces still seem to be around for sure. So.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I can't imagine there being many teams, not many that I've seen, none that I've seen, that have the possibility of bringing back, I think, more critical pieces than Auburn does.
Yeah, and I think what'll make it, what'll up the ante in you know, a week's time is what goes on with the draft.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think those guys, just looking at where they're slotted, it's pretty easy to assume that they're probably not coming back, but I just wonder, too, if you're only adding so much out of the portal, like, how much does that leave you to maybe try to compete for getting those guys back? I wonder how many they'd be able to pull in, because Chris Rembert and Eric Guevara both seem like long shots just based on where they're projected, but if you could get one of those guys back, you know, that'd be something else, but that's a really, really hard thing to do.
And the fact that both Chris and Eric, along with
Alex Petrovic,
are headed to the showcase.
Yeah, so they're all – it was funny. I was writing that, and it was like invites, but the way it's phrased by MLB.com is they're expected to attend. So it sounds
mm-hmm.
like they will be participating. But I think it was last I checked, you know, Chris was sitting in the same spot of probably day one, maybe fringe day one, and Eric was, I think, top five, but Petrovic was, I think, somewhere around the 10th round. Like, he's probably the biggest, you know, okay,
mm-hmm.
I think we can get this guy back just based on where he's kind of slotted right now.
That would be huge as well, because, I mean, you're already looking at bringing back four for sure of your top six. And a little, I was a little surprised Ryan Hetzler wasn't invited.
Yeah, me too. I kind of had been thinking of that quartet as, okay, these are your draft guys. Mm-hmm. So to not see him there, you know, I wonder maybe he's, I don't know if he's already back in the fold or what, but he'll be another one to watch whenever the draft rolls around. I guess that's next month.
Yeah.
It's usually during media days.
Mm-hmm.
At least I've always found.
Yeah, so that will be that, and then of course the signees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's going to be.
You've got the guys who are going to be at the showcase.
Yeah, and I think they broke down the listing as they put next to it like the top 200 guys, and you've only got two, but one of them's Coleman Borthwick is the mm-hmm. guy this year of 2A. I think he's projected. I think he's the 32nd best player in MLB's projections, and then. I think it was A.J. Rice was his name, was, mm-hmm. you know, 100, 150. But no, you had, I think it was four guys invited. And so,
right.
you know, if you can get those pieces in, I mean, that track record that they've had with freshmen is just unbelievable.
It's phenomenal over the last couple of years.
You know, and I wonder if you get to a point where you've had such a good track record that you could start pulling in those guys who are slotted so high. But no, you should be able to. Surely there will be a gem or two in there at this rate. I don't know with how consistent it's been. You can never count on it, but at this rate.
No, I feel like, yeah, the track record says that there's going to be another one or two that are able to step right in and really contribute as true freshmen.
And it's just the most, like, unexpected, I would say, maybe luxury of, I mean, sure, like they scout these guys, you know, for years and mm-hmm. getting them to campus, but I just feel like you never go into it reasonably expecting in the fall, okay, yeah, one or two of these guys, like they're going to be right here. So now we'll see what that'll be. I'm trying to think all the way back to Ike, that would have been 23. So you've had at least one in each of those
yes.
years. Yeah. No. So who knows?
Yep. So, that's something to keep an eye on. But, again, we'll keep you updated here. As we're about to head to the bottom of the ninth, North Carolina leading West Virginia 12-7 there in the College World Series. Something that we mentioned yesterday and Drew commented just as we were about to come on, a lot of people around here paying a little bit more attention to the World Cup and Argentina last night as they blank Algeria 3-0 with all three goals coming from Messi, who now ties the all-time record for goals in World Cup in World Cup competition.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I know we were talking about this too, but with that game being in Kansas City, it was just like experiencing everything that happened a week ago, and then seeing on my.
You can tell all your yeah. all your buddies that were there. Yeah, I saw that last week.
No, basically, The cool thing was it looked so like, okay, they had a very similar, like, just kind of the magic of it. Like, that mm-hmm. seemed to be very present last night. And, I mean, to see that in person, a hat trick. One goal was cool enough.
Yeah, no kidding.
I can't imagine seeing three, because I think that was at least his first ever in the World Cup, a hat trick. But, no, it's I don't know. My brother's been getting really into it. He was texting me last night, and I had Omaha on, and he was talking about I think it was Norway or Finland was maybe the game before, but I was just like I need to get there. I need to get into it this year. So maybe that'll be for the daybreak of Omaha. What is that tomorrow?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. We need
should be.
Yeah. So
if that would be if Oklahoma takes care of business.
All right. Well, Sooners, help me out.
That's right.
Please help me out.
I don't know that there are a ton of people around here that would be brokenhearted if Georgia goes ahead and gets eliminated.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty good point. That's a pretty good point. But that's, man, to have both Texas and Georgia out before the championships, just, I don't know. That's you've got three teams this year to me that are just like prolific college baseball teams that didn't make it as far as they should have between those two and Tech. So.
Mm-hmm. And UCLA was the number one overall seed. They didn't make it out of their own regional either.
I think I don't know that anybody was saying then that you expected that, but I don't know how many people were super surprised.
Right.
You know.
Well, I think they may not have been shocked that they're not in Omaha, mm-hmm. but the fact that they didn't make it out of their own regional probably was a bigger shock.
Yeah, that's a pretty good point, because it just, I don't know, those numbers, those metrics, they were never. I was like, okay, like they
yeah, against
they've,
who?
They've won a lot, but right. Yeah, no, you've snuck away with a 12 inning win in Piscataway.
They kept coming from behind. I mean, they mm-hmm. had more. I mean, which is very impressive,
right?
But still, you wondered, you know, is it going to last?
Yeah,
can
playing that
continue
playing that type of game usually catches up to mm-hmm. you. So Came for him a little early.
All right, we'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind sports-wise, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Bill, Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser. Drew is at the controls here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive, ESPN 106.7, and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Adam, we were talking as we were just about ready to get on the air. It's about to that time. I mean, where you can't help but just sort of be looking forward to the upcoming academic and athletic year, because things are about wound down. I mean, you've got the World Cup, you've got Major League Baseball. There's not much else that's going to be going on here for a while.
Yeah, and especially with, I think, track wrapped up over the weekend right. in Eugene. So it's officially, I mean, the book is closed on 25, 26 calendar year, at least athletic calendar year. But I don't know. I feel like Ricky Bobby after the first interview lately. I don't know what to do with my hands. You know, it's just been – but no, it's also – I mean, it's fun too. I think we might have talked about this to some degree the last time I was on, but just getting to look ahead to the next year and getting to kind of map things out for what's down the road. Cause it's, you know, I mean, what you've got year one for a football coach, you've got a pretty pivotal year two for a basketball mm-hmm. coach, and then, you know, steady as she goes in baseball, but a pivotal year nonetheless over there at Plainsman Park next year. So there's a lot to be prepping for and a lot to look forward to in the next year.
Yeah. And then, with women's basketball and softball, mm-hmm. it's like, all right, can mm-hmm. you start making that step back to where you want to be?
Yeah, especially with – because I think it was straight up a step back this year for softball, at least in terms of records. So, you know, but that's one of those two where I wish I had a better grasp on where Auburn kind of sits in the lexicon of the SEC, because it's one where I'd imagine you go into that with the expectation of, okay, yeah, this might take us a few years, mm-hmm. you know, to really get this back to where it was. I know that was before my time, but I know the peak was pretty high.
Oh, it was. I mean, it was, you hope it wasn't like a supernova, because, I mean, mm-hmm. really it sort of came out of nowhere, and Auburn was there, and the crowds were crazy. You couldn't find a ticket. And then, you know, you hit that big bump, and it's been tough to get back.
Yeah, and you think about, I don't know, I mean, how much did you keep up with Bree Ellis after she left Auburn? She was a freshman first baseman, but I just, some of the names that were like in that class, you think about, you know, there was a point where, okay, if you kept those people around, mm-hmm. you'd never know what it looks like. But also, I'm totally blanking on the head softball coach's last names right now.
The Malvos.
Malvos. There we go. That was it. I knew it was a complex spelling. But no, I mean, like, I feel like they were such a touted hire when they came in. And obviously, I mean, you know, it's not common for a married couple, but they learned from the folks at Tennessee and were mm-hmm. under them for a long time. So no, you're right. It'll be you'd like to see that next leap for the Malvos and Larry Vickers, you know, next year. But it's, I don't know, women's sports in the SEC, it's a gauntlet. It's such a gauntlet. But
there aren't many sports in the SEC that aren't, though.
That's a very good point. I think bowling would be the only one, because Vanderbilt's the only one. But no. It's gonna be a really big year. Is construction starting on the north end zone this coming year too? I think it is. So yeah, it's just no. You've got things to think about in every sort of category next year.
No question. We were talking about it a little yesterday, and just getting folks' thoughts as to, you know, the upcoming year. As you said, I mean, really important years went in sort of differing ways in multiple sports, and just asking folks, you know, what sport are you the most excited about? Which one are you maybe the most concerned about? And, you know, some of the reasons why. I mean, and it's interesting. I mean, I think right now the word I'd use something that's been overused many, many times, but I'd say Auburn football fans are cautiously optimistic. They almost, I feel like, feel like that over the last few years, they've started getting optimistic and then sort of had their hopes dashed.
Yeah.
And so they're a little afraid to jump right in and say, yeah, we're going to be back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because you've felt that way. You've had some talent here over the last few years, but it hasn't really been able to produce the way you thought on the field. And now you've got a completely different change, a shift in culture. I think that everything up to this point that Alex Golish and his staff have done is positive. I don't see anything that folks are concerned about that has gone on to this point. Yet I think folks are a little more cautious, a little more hesitant to just feel like throw all their emotions in there and completely give their hearts right now back to Auburn football.
And I mean, I think there's a level of that's pretty fair. You know, I hope people are, you know,
I think they want to.
I don't know the addictiveness of watching your team succeed. There is nothing like that. But it's also, I think it's good to have like a healthy amount of, okay, like I'll dip my toe in this water for right now. Give me a second before it gets up mm-hmm. to my ankle kind of thing. And you know, I don't know. It's just funny to think about the hopelessness around Harsin. And I was only here for the last 9 months or so, but it was just like, okay, yeah, there's really nothing that feels like it's going to come out of here and save this tenure.
No, how's it going to get better?
Right.
And it wasn't.
And there was no proof of that. And then you go to Freeze and it's like, you've got all these reasons to be really excited, but it's just like, I guess it's all that glitters isn't gold, because what good is having that talent if you're not going to be able to coach it into the position
right.
it needs? And I feel like I'm not going to call it a balance because there was nothing much with Harsin, but I feel like you've got a balance of the things that get a fan base excited and also kind of the fundamental things that you need to succeed, you know, and hit the ground running with Golish. It's like you said, I agree. I don't think I've seen a misstep or a miscue yet or a thing that makes you just, you know, worry. If the biggest thing that makes you worry is Byron Brown's throwing motion, I think that says a lot.
No
you
kidding.
Know? So,
I mean, one of the concerns I think from a lot of people had been, you know, is this staff going to be able to recruit?
Mm-hmm.
And my goodness, they have been on a tear here lately. You know, we were looking back, and Auburn had one commitment on A-Day.
Mm-hmm.
And they're up to 18 now. And a lot of people were thinking, maybe Auburn will be able to sign, you know, 17, 18 high schoolers this coming year. It looks like they're going to go well past that.
Yeah, it just feels like such a shift, especially in terms of the, you know, I'm sure a lot of those coaches aren't living and dying by the recruiting site rankings. I'm sure they have their own evaluations, but you've added a lot of guys who are just widely touted, you know.
Oh yeah, when you're beating Georgia and mm-hmm. Texas and Notre Dame and Penn State for some of these players, that means more to me sometimes than the number that's assigned to them.
Yeah, and I mean, I think especially just with what I feel like you didn't really have much of an expectation after seeing the heights of recruiting that came to be with the last guy.
You saw top 10 classes and then, you know, losing seasons.
And I just imagine there's probably I don't know that consensus is the right word, but I imagine many people come into it thinking, well, we're probably not going to recruit at that level under Golish, but you know, however close we can get, great. Now it's like you're right there. You know, I don't know that you're going to be signing a bunch of five stars coming down the stretch, but to have a consensus top 15 class, to have so many blue chippers in the way you do, like they're the really big piece of all of this is development. And you know, to go out and get quality talent that you can take that much further with development, like they're really setting up nicely to build something here. It feels like.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So I mean, there are definitely everything appears to be positive, and we'll see. I mean, we're getting close. Media Day's coming up in just a month, and then a couple of weeks after that, the start of fall practice. So looking forward to it. I mean, it looks like, you know, unless, and there can be, I mean, there's some guys that get hurt over the summer. Auburn should be pretty healthy going into the fall. I believe that Golish has said that everybody should be full go for the summer workouts. So that's good news right there. We've got, obviously, have some questions that are yet to be answered. Big questions. I think the first one's probably up front, offensive line.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's still, you know, is Stanton Ramil going to be in a place?
Right.
I know he's supposed to be healthy, but, you know, is he going to be in a healthy enough place that he can come in and slide into that left tackle spot? Because that's, I mean, gosh, I think about Percy Lewis 2 years ago,
right.
If I'm right, and that just, you know, that was obviously a late ad, but just did not.
Oh, he was highly touted, though, one of the more highly touted guys in the portal.
And did not work out in the slightest, and it just throws you into a tailspin. So that's one where you got to, you know, him above all else, get him healthy and get him where you need him. But, you know, it's after that, it's just looking like, okay, you've got pieces, but where the heck are they all going to go, and how much are they going to be used?
Well, there's no question the offensive line has been a big priority for this staff. I mean, they brought in 15 new players with the 9 transfers and 6 signees and already have 4 commitments. So, I mean, they're doing everything they can to have as many options as possible there on the offensive line. And it's obvious Tyler Hodanik makes a good impression on and relates well, I would say, with the younger players, because he's not that much older than they are.
Yeah, and you were talking earlier about like teams that have been beat out, and it's like you mentioned, I think it was Notre Dame and Texas, but both of those guys were, you know, you beat out those schools for blue chip L linemen, mm-hmm. you know, and to be able to go up there and get those sorts of things done, especially with I think it was Leighton Von Brandt was the guy who was tied to Notre Dame,
right.
And he was from Delaware. And then Reed Ramsey, isn't that how it's pronounced?
Ramsey, yeah,
probably.
I'm not sure if it's Ramsey or Ramsey. It looks like it should be Ramsey, but
we're gonna assume that for now, I guess. But you know, obviously Florida guy, I'm sure uh-huh. there's a connection there. But to go to parts unknown, it's kind of like when Mycen Johnson Cook committed, the running back out of East St. Louis. Like, you know, Auburn's not recruiting the Midwest that much, but
they hadn't been, no.
But to go out there and get a big name guy like that, that's usually a pretty good sign that you've got people in the building who are on the right track. So,
mm-hmm. Yep. So we'd love your thoughts. Anything you want to talk about? You want to take a look ahead? Are you optimistic? Are you what are you concerned about? And I'll continue. We started this late yesterday, but you know, what sport or sports are you really excited about for the upcoming year, and why? But anything on your mind sports-wise, we're a quarter of the way in. Here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive, we'll get to our bottom-of-the-hour break. Again, 334-321-1390. That's The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Come on in and join us.
The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive on what right now is a pretty nice looking afternoon. We've had a good bit of rain here over the last couple of days, and looking for a few more days of that, but that's okay unless you had some real fun plans or something outdoors, because we need it. We've needed the rain. Got to try to get the water table back where it should be. Speaking of getting back where it should be, I want to talk a little bit. Send a shout out to the folks at Game Day Men's Health. I mean, I started with them back in November. And I went in and I was dragging. I was tired all the time. I didn't have any energy. Part of that was because I needed to lose some weight. And man, they have worked wonders. They're great. I mean, you go in and you get a complete lab. You get complete lab work, and they determine, you know, what would be the best path for you. And I'm very pleased to say I'm down over 30 pounds. I feel much better.
Nice.
And I mean, they redo lab work like every 3 months. So checking and seeing how things are going. My labs are great now. Went and saw my regular doctor, and he's like, man, this is the best labs I've had. And so I'm really pleased. So I mean, if you've got any type concerns, I mean, they're all kinds of things that they work with you for, not just obviously weight management, weight loss is some, but I mean, low T, low energy. I mean, they've got all different kinds of things that that will work and work well for you. So I would strongly encourage guys, you know, check them out. Game Day Men's Health, they're all over. There's one right here in town out near Moores Mill. And you can give them a, you can go online, Game Day Men's Health, and check it out. Or you can give them a call, 209-3706. They're open Monday through Friday from 9 to 5. So do check them out. I guarantee you, you'll be feeling better. Let's see, where were we a little while ago? You were just you mentioned to me before we move on. Eric Guevara did not win win the Collegiate Gold Glove. There must be a spectacular defensive third baseman out there, because Eric's is about as good as I've seen at the hot corner in college.
I was gonna say, yeah, this was what I saw, and now of course I've lost it. But yeah, Colby Branch was on there because it was a Gold Glove for every spot. And I'm trying to think of who else. Colby Branch was the only one who stuck out, and I remember seeing him make a couple pretty savvy plays for Georgia. But no, I mean, I know you and I were both talking about it, and I know you've been around this level of the game a little more than I have, but like he's certainly the best third baseman I've ever seen at this level in terms of the glove, and I can't
think of one that I've ever seen that can make all the plays that he can. I mean, the range, the arm, he's got it all.
It's like I think the way I would describe it is it starts at his glove, but it's almost like his body's like a pillow taking impact from the ball, you know, and it's just so smooth and fluid. And the fact that, I mean, it seems like every time he makes the throw, doesn't matter where it's from, but you know, he has had that since he was a freshman. Like, I remember that all the way back in fall when he was a freshman.
And this past year, I mean, of course, you know, he got some work there at shortstop, and was fine at shortstop, but he is so much better at third base. And I think Auburn was so much better with him moving back there to third.
Yeah, and even with, you know, I mean, they talked about it a little bit throughout the year, especially like Brandon McCrane did, but, you know, having him as kind of a captain at that third base spot to kind of be telling guys, hey, you know, scoot up, get back, move over here, do this, that. Like, I think that really helped Auburn in the field a ton this year, just kind of having his voice out there as much as they had his glove and his arm.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no question. So, you know, it's a shame that he didn't win that, but he'll get an opportunity to show. It'll be really interesting. Again, he's going to be at that MLB showcase and most likely – going to be a pretty high draft pick. If not, I mean, man, sure, Auburn would love to have him back. But they added, as we said a little while ago, they added an infielder that could play second or third. Mm-hmm. They've got some other options there. I wonder, Ethan Bingaman could move to either of those spots, because he wasn't a first baseman until this past year, really.
Right, and I mean, he started out the year, I remember all the way back in Arlington, he was primarily in right field, you know? So that's a guy who I think you could plug around the infield. I'd be interested to see him at one of those, whether it's third or like him at second base intrigues me.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think he's athletic enough he could play third, but you don't, you know, it's always a premium. You saw it a lot with Chris Rembert of having a really good athlete at second base, and you know, we'll see, but that's a positive you have going into next year if you're able to return a bunch of that core. Is that's a guy you could move around and slot around for the sake of the lineup, you know, and not at least expect to see much drop off at the plate.
Yeah, well, goodness, I mean, what a freshman year he had. 330 with 15 bombs, and hit better in conference than he did before the conference.
Yeah, it seemed you know, it's never linear in baseball. I know it's never linear, but it seemed near linear with him as far as the progress and the production that you saw at the plate. It didn't really seem to waver all that much down the stretch from him, which is always, you know, it's always been a good sign from those promising Auburn freshmen. Is it feels like, you know, you saw that with Chris's freshman year. I really remember you saw the same with Ike. The power came on, like that's.
Yeah, and for a lot of freshmen, it's a grind. By the end of the year, it's really tough. And you see, you know, freshmen all across the country that are having outstanding years that sort of tail off a little bit as they you know, hit the wall there at the end of the season.
Yeah, so to have that from him, and then, I mean, the other thing that I just always thought was a huge positive from the year was the fact that Mason McCrane got hot early, eventually kind of dipped out of the lineup, and then you re-slot him back in. And, you know, to have that bounce back from a freshman is, you know, I mean, I'd say it's pretty comparable to having them kind of on that, what feels like an ascent towards the year instead of burning out like we were talking about with Bingy.
Yeah, I mean, Mason got the opportunity there as a leadoff hitter, and that just sort of seemed to spark him and the team.
Yeah, that's a kid who, if he manages to reach, like, I don't want to say all of his potential because he's not going to reach all of it in college, but as much as you can squeeze out of it at this level, like, whether it's next year or the year after, like, based on pure talent, if you can squeeze that out of him, I'm not going to be shocked at all if in a year or two he's, like, your best player.
Well, you know, I wondered, and Jason talked about it a little bit yesterday, I mean, both Ethan and Mason came in as you know, possible two-way guys.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw an inning out of Ethan this year. But I'm really intrigued about, you know, seeing him get an opportunity on the mound as well.
Mason did throw some, like, you know, live at-bats after media availabilities this year. You go out there and be like, mm-hmm. I don't remember them having a lefty that tall. And then it's like, oh, that one. Okay. But, you know, that'll be an interesting one to watch because the fact that they didn't DH a ton this year, I mean, Mason did a little more down the stretch,
right.
But I remember with Ike, it was primarily DH, and it was okay, we'll get him into the catching thing kind of after he gets settled in. But you wonder if they're able to take on all that. Obviously, it's not catching, but, you know, if they'd make some return to the mound and see that kind of thing. But also, I mean, just you've got – with the way this pitching staff's setting up again, like, I, you know, you don't need it necessarily.
No, you don't have to.
Yeah.
But if you're good enough to be able to come in, especially guys that can be used, like, as a closer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't have to have, you know, multiple innings out of them. I mean, I go all the way back to watching Mississippi State bring in Bobby Thigpen from right field mm-hmm. to close out. And you're seeing more and more guys that are being given the opportunity to be two-way players now. What were you about to add?
I was about to totally gear shift. Was Thigpen on those Thunder and Lightning teams?
Indeed. He was the right fielder with Palmeiro and Will Clark.
Okay, because I seem to remember, like, I wrote a little bit about Bo last year, and, like, I remember reading his name. But did he pitch professionally? Was that it?
Oh, Thigpen set the Major League record for saves when he was with the White Sox at one time. He had 57 saves.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. No, because that's – I remember coming across him.
He gave up the bat when he went on to the pros.
Because, yeah, I wrote about it. It was like he had – I think it was Bo hit a home run to right, but the thing Coach Baird told me about it that was crazy was he was like, there was no lateral move. Like, he didn't load up into it.
No.
He was just basically standing there.
Yeah, his wrist. And he was so strong.
And my favorite part of that story was he was like, I saw that. I went back and watched the film and noticed it, and I went up to Bo the next day at BP, and he told me, he was like, usually that's the kind of thing that it takes an off season to kind of get your timing and your mechanics down mm-hmm. for that. I started talking to him and I stopped myself, and Bo's like, no, coach, like, tell me what you saw. And he's like, I told Bo 8 swings later in BP, he's got it timed down and it's like every ball is leaving the yard. And it was just, that was his, like, that's Bo Jackson.
Yes.
Is, you know, he could do it in a blink. Like, you all you had to do was tell him and give him a little bit of time and he would figure it out.
He was. I mean, we talked about this after Messi's appearance over at Jordan-Hare, mm-hmm. Talking about the greatest athlete you'd ever seen. And it's like, Bo, there's no question. Just watching him, I mean, I was fortunate enough to do the play-by-play when he was playing baseball. Mm-hmm. Here, and I mean, some of the things he did, and Mississippi State, there's a story of the Mississippi State story that I'm reminded of is I'm trying to remember the shortstop for Mississippi State. Was it Klipstein? But anyway, their shortstop was on second base, and I believe I don't remember if it was Palmeiro or Clark was up, but whoever Auburn had pitching, we had him played sort of the opposite way.
Mm-hmm.
So Bo's over in left center,
mm-hmm.
and there's a ball that is driven, I mean, to the gap in right center. I mean, really right center. And I'm just a ridiculous run and amount of ground that had to be covered. But the runner at second base for Mississippi State realized who was in center field. So, I mean, he didn't even take two steps off. He went back and was standing on second base
mm-hmm.
because Bo made the catch running toward the fence with his back to second base.
Mm-hmm.
Caught the ball, the runner tagged, and the throw from the warning track in right center came in on the fly, chest high.
Yeah.
And the runner coming from second base was barely past the shortstop.
Yeah, I mean, by the time
he just stopped.
Man.
And the third baseman walked over and tagged him.
That's, oh my gosh. That was like that. And then Tim Jesse, I think it was, told me this story. But he said they used to go out to the ballpark and play like the football team would play this sort of game of keep away.
Mm-hmm.
And Bo had the ball and he was like, you know, cornered up against the fence. And as Tim told it to me, I mean, it used to be like, I don't know that there was barbed wire, but it was like almost.
There was. It had been barbed wire and they bent it down.
Yeah, he was basically like, it was, you don't want to get tangled up in that. And Bo got up against the fence and jumped. Just flat-footed and jumped over the fence and landed on the other side. And everybody just looked at each other, and he hopped over the fence to come back, and he was giggling. And he looks at everybody and is like, why are you guys shocked? And Tim's like, did you see what you just did? And he was like, yeah, I won keep away. Like that yeah. was all he had to say.
Just matter of fact, I'm sure, because, yeah, he just could do it.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, yeah, he used to have the chain link type fence with what had been barbed wire at the top, and they ran green slats through it.
Okay.
To make it look like a green fence.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, we're having fun here. I mean, obviously, as you can tell, there's not a ton of breaking stuff. Want to get Adam's thoughts when we come back on the Brendan Sorsby sort of solution that we have come to, that and more. But hey, we'd love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about, 334-321-1390 as we continue here on the Wednesday Drive.
War Eagle, this is Coach Larry Vickers, and you're
The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Adam Cole here in the studio. Drew at the controls. And, yeah, I wanted to get your thoughts, Adam. I mean, it's pretty funny. I mean, day before yesterday on Monday comes the word that the Big 12 is suing Texas Tech over the Brendan Sorsby situation. And that night, it's announced that Texas Tech and Brendan Sorsby have reached a mutual agreement to part ways. I think that is in the best interest of all parties involved there. I just feel like Texas Tech and maybe Sorsby and his folks realized this isn't going away.
Yeah, I think you realize it's not going away, and as much as you probably realize that from a PR perspective, like I imagine once it reached the point of, okay, we could be up to our ears in litigation from...
When your conference is suing you.
Yeah, that's you know, maybe you need to rethink it a little bit there. So, no, that's what needed to happen from the jump, and I know impressed is not the right word. I guess I'm impressed with the gall that it took to take it that far.
Right.
You know, I mean, I know we talked about it. I know we've talked about it some of the last few times I've been on, but just, you know, all the eligibility stuff, I understand there are new precedents being set and whatnot. Like there's enough grounds there in theory to take that, you know, to a court. But like this, it's just like, no, like this has always been.
This is something that is a no-no at every level of sports.
It's always been so clear cut. And now, you know, I know we were talking a little bit about it at one of the breaks, but it's like, is somebody really going to take Sorsby in the supplemental draft? I don't know.
I can't see how they would. I mean, I had said, before the temporary injunction came along, that if he didn't win the temporary injunction, was an NFL team going to take a chance on him? I mean, would they be interested in a player that has broken one of the NFL's cardinal rules?
Right, exactly. That's the thing, is it's like like you said, I mean, a cardinal rule, a cardinal sin, like don't gamble on sports, and definitely
and really don't gamble on your own team.
Yeah, no. So it's I don't understand how we're trying to rethink the punishment for that sort of thing. And you know,
he's got $5 million.
It's, you know, I'm glad somebody wins.
Even if he doesn't get a chance to play this year, he's not hurting.
That's honestly I did not know that was how it was set up. So that's like, you know, that's. Because, you know, I mean, seriously, I hope he gets the help he needs, especially if it's from an addiction. Yeah, and I figure we're all in that boat. But, you know, I think the only thing, I know we were chatting a bit about it too, but his representation talking about today, I think it was that Cincinnati was in the loop on this stuff for 2 years and didn't do anything about it.
And that should be a problem for Cincinnati.
Yeah,
if they knew all along that he had that problem and was doing that.
Yeah,
then yes, he shouldn't have been playing.
No, absolutely. So I wonder what more we'll hear of it. But it sounds like we're out of the woods as far as whether or not we'll see him as a Red Raider next year.
Won't see him as a collegian next year. I mean, and we'll see if he gets the opportunity. But so he's planning on entering the supplemental draft. Did see that, hey, the last time a player was taken in the supplemental draft was 2019.
Okay. Who was it? Do we know?
I don't even know. I just saw the note yesterday on ESPN as they flashed it across that last supplemental draft was 23, but the last time a player was taken was 19.
Okay.
We can check. We can find that out.
Yeah. No, I just always remember, I think it was Terrell Pryor. Mm-hmm. That was like 2012, though.
Yeah, that's been a while.
But... yeah, no, we'll see.
Music's playing. That means we're halfway done here on the Wednesday Drive. Adam's back for another hour. I'll stick around, too. we hope you'll join us, 334-321-1390, for hour number two of the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on a day that started out rainy, but it's not bad here. Temperatures much milder than we had last week, but all the rain has helped bring those temperatures down. Hope everybody's doing well on this Wednesday. Bill, Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser joining me here in the studio. And Adam, we were we mentioned a couple of times, it's about to be the slow time here in especially in this part of the country. I mean, we focus so much on college sports, as the College World Series is pretty much the last gasp for this academic year. And earlier today, North Carolina eliminated West Virginia, so they've got off until Saturday. So the Friday, I guess, is the day everybody was going to get off.
Okay.
Tomorrow would be the day. If you have, you know, if either North Carolina had lost today or if Georgia beats Oklahoma,
okay,
tomorrow would be the day that they play to determine who will face North Carolina, and then everybody gets Friday off. So North Carolina in really good shape. They haven't lost. They get a couple of days off. Oklahoma could be in the same situation if they beat Georgia this evening.
So what you're telling me is if Oklahoma wins today, I could have 2 days to catch up on the World Cup.
That is right.
Okay. All right. There we go. No, where is Oklahoma's pitching at? Because Mercurius had a pretty good game for him.
Oh, he had a great game.
Phenomenal game. And then I forget what they pitched in game one, but if they're sitting in a good place pitching-wise.
I think they're in pretty good shape. Now, Georgia is too, because they haven't used many pitchers at all.
My word.
What's been crazy is Georgia hadn't scored.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's been the problem. I mean, they shut out Texas. They only give up one run in their opening game. I mean, it's been, you know, I think they used three pitchers in their first two games.
Yeah.
So Georgia's, you know, has not had great pitching all year, but they haven't had to use much here in Omaha.
No, and I think they were talking about it actually on the broadcast the last time they played, of the fact that this has gone from a team that you know can win slugging the ball, and mm-hmm. I don't doubt that they can. I imagine there's a little bit of nerves, you know, in Omaha.
Oh, yeah.
It's a pretty big stadium, if you've never been, in a pretty big stage nonetheless. But the fact that that team has been able to win games the way it has, the fact that it was, what, Volchko in their first game?
Yes.
I mean, what he did was ridiculous. And then I forget if it was – was it Vigue who pitched game two for them? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, because the name I've always gone back to with them is Aoki. You know, that's the name I tend to
think
of.
Well, maybe Aoki pitched game two and Vigue three.
I think
that's the way it went.
We're going to get on this, but needless to say, I mean, like, the fact that they've been able to win games in different ways and have the pitching step up, like, it's a shame.
And they're still fighting their way out of the loser's bracket.
It's a shame you're in the loser's bracket, because you look, I would say, in a way, like, even though they don't look like they're firing on all cylinders, they – probably look as capable as they have all year. The fact that they can win games in those different ways. But, yeah, no. If Oklahoma's sitting in a pretty good spot pitching-wise, though, I'm not going to be shocked if they're able to do it, you know, win three and just get there. But we'll see. That Georgia team is I guess they can beat you in a lot of ways now.
Well, I mean, they have just been phenomenal all year. I mean, a team that was picked in the lower half of the SEC to win the conference going away and just be as dominant as they have been all year. But, yeah, their backs are against the wall. They've got to win it tonight to have an opportunity to beat Oklahoma again to get against North Carolina. I was going to ask you, though, Adam, I mean, as a way of sort of letting everybody know what you've got going, what's coming up, what is on tap here as you head into what is a slower time? I mean, there's not on-the-field action really to be writing about, so now's the time where you find some folks and write some features and let us know things about players and coaches that we didn't know.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that going on right now as far as just whether it's stuff coming up for next year or, you know, even planting some seeds for some stuff that could be a little further down the line. You know, the funny thing is, like, I haven't been thinking about it much, but it came up and, you know, we do a weekly meeting where, you know, the sports sure. guys meet and, NBA draft. I didn't realize, like, it's not a lock by any means, but Keyshawn Hall's pretty widely projected to be a second round pick.
Okay. I didn't realize that.
So I'm, you know, that's on my docket for some stuff I got to prep. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you know, the other thing I need to be keeping an eye on for sure is just, this weekend, the U.S. Open, right? You know, and Jackson Coyden.
And Logan Riley.
And Logan Riley, yeah. Like, it's, you know, we've got a guy in the network who's in Alabama who really likes writing golf, and we've been talking with all the Coyden stuff. There's probably more here and there we could have done, but the thing I told him I realized a few months ago was it was like, well, if this is the last year of college, like, there's still going to be so much to write about him down the line as he embarks on a professional career. That's a guy who...
Oh, he's one of the most dominant amateurs that's been around for, you know, at least a decade or so.
Right. So, like, it's, you know, there's going to be plenty to write about Jackson Coyden, it seems like, in the years to come, for sure.
I noticed yesterday, I was just, you know, scrolling through ESPN, and on the front page of ESPN was a Jackson Coyden story yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Did you see what he said about coming back to Auburn for another year?
No, I didn't.
I thought it was, and this is the thing to me of, like, it's always going to be the dominance that leads with him and his story, especially at the college level. But when you just look into, like, maybe reading between the tea leaves a little bit of just, like, kind of who he is and in his nature, I mean, he just straight up said he was like, I wasn't ready. Like, I think my game was in a place where it was good enough, but he was like, I just don't think I was ready to leave, like, the college experience. And I just, the way that he talked about it to me, like, this is somebody who, as dominant as they are, like, they're pretty darn deliberate, you know, in what they do. And it doesn't seem like there's any sort of rush or any sort of pressure, it feels like, on his shoulders when you hear him talk, you know, which is...
and rightfully so. Very, very confident that he can go out and compete with anybody in the world. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that I don't think he's concerned about that. It's just making sure he's in the right mindset. And look, and you're having a good time and enjoying yourself. You know, you can wait a few months before you're earning that first big paycheck.
Yeah, why not go cement it and put yourself down as the most dominant golfer in the history of the college game? You know, like, I don't think there's much argument. Like, there are guys who he's in the orbit with for sure, but I just go back to you never had a multi-time winner, the Nicklaus, the Hogan, and the Haskin Award, you know? Mm. You've never had that. He is one of one, you know? Would you put him on your Auburn Mount Rushmore right now?
I can't imagine why you wouldn't.
Yeah.
I mean...
Because when I got asked that a few weeks ago, and I think
there are a few, though. I mean,
right?
You know, if you're going to limit it to four,
we're going by standard Mount Rushmore
then
rules,
you're limiting it to four. That's
where I get
it's tough.
Because you know who would be my fourth? I really think Suni Lee. Like, that's, you know, it's not just a medal; it's a gold medal, right?
Well, it's crazy, right? We were having a conversation the other day about how amazing it was in the 80s here at Auburn when you had Bo Jackson and Charles Barkley and Frank Thomas, and then it got and Harvey Glantz and Rowdy Gaines.
Yep.
I mean, you had, you know, world champions and just legends, you know, Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
And yes, it's tough. It's tough. I mean, he's definitely the greatest golfer ever, and one of the greatest athletes. But it's, I don't know, when you get to four, I don't know.
It's, yeah, my answer at the time was, I think by the time his pro career is well off, if not, you know, said and done, like, if you're judging it on the scope of these athletes' entire careers and not just Auburn, I think he'd be well up there. But, you know, it's one of those things where I just, like, off the dome, I'm like, well, you know, in a lot of regards, probably, but I'm not as sure as I think I should be, to be honest. But
well, that just tells you Auburn's had that they have had some great athletes in different sports.
Mm-hmm. No, it's I really think, you know, people try to put together who has the best, like, trifecta, you know, in college sports, and it's really, I don't know that there are many out there that are better than Auburn's.
No, I mean, well, Frank Thomas is still the only SEC player in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
I think Todd Helton. A year or two ago.
That's right. That's
but
right.
Up until then, yeah,
that's
he
true.
Was.
That's right. He was the first.
Which is
right.
Still just the craziest thing. You
it
know?
Is. But then, you know, until 20, 25 years ago, most players, great players, didn't play college.
Yeah.
They went ahead and signed pro deals out of high school.
Yeah. So, no, the fact that, I mean, I just the fact that that is you just figure with, I mean, I know the SEC's been so good in baseball for a long, long while. You figure that would have been, that surely somebody else would have found their way in there. But, you know, I wonder how much that number multiplies in the years to come.
Oh, yes.
You know, and surely it will. But, yeah, no, I just don't think there are many trifectas out there beating Auburn's. You know, it's pretty hard to beat having arguably the greatest athlete, certainly multi-sport athlete of all time on that list. And somebody who, you know, as good of an athlete as he was, I just, the personality that Charles Barkley has become, you've got a tapestry there, I think.
Larger than life is the perfect description of Charles Barkley.
Yeah, and then you've got the guy who's the modern equivalent to Paul Bunyan right next to him, and the guy whose nickname was the Big Hurt, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, that's got to be one of the best nicknames of all time.
Right.
You know, there's not many others out there like that.
No, so that's a fun topic, and something we can do. I mean, I hate to just sort of jump into it a quarter of the way through hour number two, but yeah, that's definitely a topic for some time here in the summer. Is your Mount Rushmore of Auburn athletes and any schools that can challenge?
Yeah,
Auburn's, you know, trifecta there in football, basketball, and baseball.
I need to sit down and look
that would
through
be, that's
that
fun.
Yeah,
that's a fun thought.
No, because there's got to be a couple other, like, I think,
oh, I'm sure.
I think UCLA would be.
I would think, yeah.
You know, because you've got Jackie Robinson on there. You've got Troy Aikman in football, I'd say.
And you've got a few in basketball. There's Lou Alcindor and a few guys.
And you could throw John Wooden on there. And how many coaches are that prolific right. that you'd put on a Rushmore? You know, so. But that's about the only one I can think of. So no, I'd love to hear. Yeah, if anybody else has any answers out there, I'd love to hear them.
Yeah, all right, we can definitely do that. Think of schools that have athletes of the stature of Bo, Charles, and Frank. 334-321-1390. That or anything on your mind sports wise. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive.
If you're looking for me on social media, whether that's Twitter or TikTok, you just search at Cole Reporter. That's my last name, C-O-L-E, and the word reporter, and you'll be able to find me wherever you're looking for me.
All right, easy as that. 334-321-1390 is the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to it, and Slack is up first. Hey, Slack.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing fine, man.
With the commitment from the safety, how are we looking with the defensive end? You think he's on board as well?
That's a good question. Nyer Crum, is that who you're talking about? He just made it official. I think everybody's been feeling really good about that. Man, it's amazing the pipeline that Auburn has developed with the state of Maryland, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, I don't mean to cut you off, but you mentioned the defensive end, the teammate of his, right?
Yeah.
I will say, as I was like reading up to get my pre-write for this kid ready, I saw that name mentioned, and I knew I needed to circle back, but I saw that. I don't know how highly like touted that defensive end teammate is, but I'd imagine, you know, just with the inroads Auburn's made in Maryland to not only have that inroad as well as, you know, that guy being a teammate of a commit, like, that usually puts you in a pretty good spot. I wish I had more of an intel sort of answer to give you, but no, that's a name I needed to circle back on, that defensive end teammate.
Yeah, he's a four-star, and he's committing in a couple of days.
Okay, well, I don't know. Yeah. I'm assuming Auburn's on his list of finalists, but I'd imagine, you know, especially with having all the momentum right now and that commitment coming in a couple of days, I imagine you're in a pretty good spot. But that'll definitely be one to watch because they've only had one edge rusher commit to this point, mm-hmm. right? So I'd imagine you're looking to add another.
I see where Georgia picked up a D tackle commitment. So how does that help us with the big kid out of Birmingham? You think he's Auburn, and I think it was Auburn, Georgia, and Texas.
Yes, those were his top three schools. There's no question. I mean, Auburn would they'd love to get him. Man, they've really been on a roll. That would be literally a huge addition because of the two schools that you're battling with, and he's an in-state kid that you'd love to keep him home. There's
right.
no question.
Right, right, and the defensive end also from the Birmingham mm-hmm. area.
Yep. Yeah, they're gonna go way past the projection of I think the 20 max high school players. It looks like Slack.
Oh yeah. Keyshawn Murphy. I think he gets drafted.
You do?
I did.
I wouldn't be shocked. I've seen, I will say, just following him on social media, I know he's had some workouts and some pre-draft stuff, but he's also, I mean, you look at the profile on paper of a guy who's built out like a, you know, imagine a four-man at the NBA mm-hmm. level, but like grew into that body and has a background playing in the backcourt. Like that lends itself.
It does, and I mean, and he showed it wasn't a bad looking three.
Right.
He showed this past year either.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, at 6'10", I think if he doesn't get drafted, I can see him on the roster in the NBA because size.
Yeah.
And. He's a good defensive player. He's a good rebounder at his size. He's not a center.
No, absolutely wouldn't be a center at the
but he could,
in the
he
league.
He could play three or the four.
Mm-hmm. Four for sure, I would think, yeah.
All right, guys. Appreciate it.
Good hearing from you, Slack. 334-321-1390. And Mitch is up next. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. You guys were talking about the trifecta and everything, and I got to thinking you could probably put Texas up there with Earl Campbell and Roger Clemens and Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
That's a good
you're
one.
You're right there. That is good, Mitch.
And Georgia's got two of the three. I don't know what kind of baseball players they have, but, you know, you got Hurstle and you got Dominique.
Mm-hmm.
So the biggest, I don't know who a baseball
The biggest Georgia baseball is. Name I know is Gordon Beckham, but that's not – that doesn't move the needle.
No.
Let's look.
So, yeah, Texas, well, you know, yeah, like you guys already mentioned UCLA, so especially on the basketball side. But, yeah, that's a great question, though. I mean, you know, what schools out there have, you know, the trifecta, you know, like Auburn that is well-known? And, yeah, Texas is the only one I came up with. But, hey, Bill, did you ever see the picture of that platinum record?
No, we haven't been able to access the email, and that's an embarrassment because I hate the thought that there could be all kinds of things sitting out there that people wonder why we ignored them.
Well, I sent a text message. I didn't send an email. I didn't think y'all
checked the email. No, Drew said. I mean, the thing is, Drew has been the guy or was the guy, but the access, yeah. For some reason, we can't access that. We've got to find the person that set that up, and hopefully they're still with us.
like I predicted, my uncle called me soon after I spoke to you guys because he heard part of it on the radio. He's getting his hair cut. My sister cuts his hair, But anyway, he told me the story. Yeah, they were it was either 88 or 89. They were WHHY. They were getting used albums because they were switching over to CDs.
Uh-huh. Right. So, yeah. Everybody. Yeah. Right. It took up a lot less space and was supposedly, better quality. You didn't have the scratchy sound. You wouldn't get any scratches or get some Q-Bird at the beginning of the records.
Right. But so, well, they needed a CD player, and the one that they wanted, because my uncle's in the stereo business also.
Okay.
You know who I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But and it was like $500. And so they decided that they would do a trade with him for some gold record.
Oh, so they barter. So that's pretty cool. Let's barter our way to equipment by using our gold albums that we have, the gold and platinum
right,
records.
Right. So they pretty much traded him 4 or 5 gold 45s, and I believe that one platinum record. There may have been 2. I think there was only 1. But anyway, they traded it for him. Well, I got to looking, because CD players were pretty new back then,
mm-hmm.
pretty large. And, that same $500 CD player now would cost you $1,350.
Wow.
Yeah, and adjusted for inflation. So yeah, that was a pretty good deal that he made with those records. So I just thought I'd pass that along and throw the Texas thing out there, guys. That's all I got. We'll talk to you later.
All right, Mitch. Appreciate it. Yeah, look, I go all the way back to the days where we had turntables, and that was it. And then you started using some carts. Now people are like, carts? What is a cart? Carts? Not that a horse pulling a cart. It was like it was a cartridge, sort of like 8-tracks.
Okay.
But it was just a very smaller one, and the quality of those wasn't nearly as good. But that was really, that was before FM was as big a deal. And then he went to CDs, and then we thought that was the best quality. And now you don't even need physical, you don't need records or CDs. But folks have gone much more back to vinyl now.
I will tell you,
the sound of vinyl is just, to me, it is better.
I was basically basket weaving my last semester of college. I had a beginning playwriting class, and I had 2 classes on TV shows. I had one about The Simpsons and one about The Wire.
Oh, wow.
I was living the dream.
Man, no kidding.
And so naturally, in all my boredom and free time, I got really into collecting records. And I got really into, it wasn't even the records at first. It was honestly my roommate, Bennett Durando, who used to be here in Auburn. He had gotten gifted a record player and started getting into it a little bit. And I brought home my record player from my parents' house back mm-hmm. to our apartment that winter break. And it really started as I was just doing deep dives on artists I'd always liked, but I'd never listened to all their albums front to back. And then I blink, and it's like I go to the record store, once, maybe twice a week, and I'm, I keep burning a hole in my pocket with my wallet.
Oh, man, I did that for a long time.
It was, no, and I mean, it's leveled out now, thank the Lord, but I've got, I mean, gosh, I never got to the end of it when I started cataloging them, but I got like 3 shelf fulls at my apartment here in Auburn of records I've collected over the years, and it's I don't know. That is a fun hobby.
Managed to
get my brother into it a couple years ago too at Christmas. It's I don't know. That might be my favorite hobby I have.
I need to get you to Floyd's house.
Okay.
So you can see he's got a room that's just full
mm-hmm.
of albums.
That's the goal someday, but I don't have that kind of money.
I have a decent collection, but it doesn't touch Floyd's. But I'll tell you what I did. Two radio stations that I worked at, there would be times, in smaller radio stations, down in South Alabama on weekends, there would be, some pre-recorded programs that would come in on reels of tape. And especially like on Sundays, there'd be 30-minute programs and things like that you'd run. So there'd be plenty of time, but somebody had to be there. So I would work a lot of Sunday mornings when there wasn't really much else going on. I'd stop by, grab a couple of newspapers, come in, and then go through mm-hmm. the station's library And on a different reel-to-reel, I would just record everything that I wanted there. And I got a couple of hundred 3-hour tapes just full of music from a couple of libraries from radio stations.
Yeah.
That's cool. Now, the problem is those don't hold up.
Yeah.
Those don't hold up as well. You need to keep those like as close to sealed in, you know, 70-degree temperature as possible, because those old tapes will disintegrate. And the old recorders, mm-hmm. the heads on those things go south pretty quickly. So that wasn't as brilliant a move as I thought it might be. But I mean, I still can listen to some of them.
Okay.
But yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. No, it's, I don't know, music. It's, I never, you know,
music and sports, man. It's like that's two of the best pastimes that anybody could have, well, as far as I'm concerned.
That's like, and you know, I mean, if you're out there listening and want to chime in, feel free to, but I've met a handful of people in life who tell me, like, I don't listen to music. And I'm like,
no, man, what, like, do you mean you don't,
I'm
listen,
like,
to music?
Exactly. I'm like, you listen to music. Yeah. Like, you definitely listen to music, and you just don't even realize it. That's the one. Like,
maybe you're not a huge aficionado and know, you know, everybody in that genre or whatever, but I mean, no, there's no way you don't that music doesn't impact you.
That's like sports, you know, if people aren't into sports, like, fair enough, you know,
sure,
I get it, but music's just, it's one of those things where I'm like, there's always something out there to scratch everybody's itch, you know. But
well, look, my wife worked was a social worker for a while, and it is amazing. I realize now what she was talking about sometimes there'd be some folks that really weren't they weren't able to communicate, but certain music would come on and all of a sudden they'd sing every word.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is crazy how I'll hear something, I may hear a song that I haven't heard in decades, and I'll be able to remember almost every word to
my,
it.
My
so the impression that it makes on people, and that lasts is just amazing.
My favorite story in regard to that is, for the listeners who don't know, my dad's a little older. He was 55 the year I was born, and I'm 27.
Wow.
I'll let
wow.
you do the math on that. But when I was in middle school, my brother and I, we broke away from the bunk beds, and I got my own separate room, mm-hmm. and we repainted it. And I used to listen to, like, Pandora stations back then, just,
yeah.
you know, I was listening to more music. I got really into, like, 50s rock for a little while in middle school, like,
wow.
like doo-wop, stuff like that. And I had a station on, and Run Around Sue by Dion came mm-hmm. on, and my dad and I are painting my room, and he just starts kind of giggling to himself, and I'm like, what's so funny? And he's like,
The visual, I mean, the visuals that come back. I mean, before MTV,
mm-hmm.
I mean, songs meant where you were and who you were with and what you were doing.
Well, and so on that note, he stops giggling and he turns to me and he goes, I was dating a girl named Sue when this uh-huh. song came out, and I just lasted about a week and I just couldn't do it anymore. And he broke up with her. And it was like there was nothing going on with them. It was just like the song was in his
uh-huh.
ear, and all he could think about was Run Around Sue. But that's always one that just I never forgot that. I was probably 13, and I will never forget that.
There are some. I mean, you know, as you get older, I mean, you'll hear a song and you'll remember exactly where you were and who you were with and what was going on with so many different songs. It is crazy. All right. As you can tell, we'll head in just about any direction here on the Wednesday Drive. Need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us here in the final half hour.
The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Adam Cole here in the studio. Drew is at the controls. Again, love for you to join in. Anything on your mind here on the on this Wednesday edition, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Well, Slack brought it up a little while ago. We haven't really talked much about Nyjer Crum. Auburn today, let's see, adding a adding its 19th commitment in football. And we talked a little while ago about Auburn adding its second pitcher and fourth addition from the transfer portal for baseball. So it's been a pretty good news day for Auburn Athletics.
Yeah, no, and that looking at that teammate that was pointed out, James Pace.
Yes,
he's not a consensus 4-star, but when you go look at these guys, I head to On3 because they like. 247 is my old reliable. That's what mm-hmm. I cite in my stories. But On3 lays out every ranking from each site. And so, like, he's not a consensus 4-star, but the only one he's not a 4-star on is Rivals. And he doesn't even have a national ranking on Rivals. So I would imagine when
they haven't rated him yet.
Basically. Happened. But, like, he's got a 3-star rating, but he's not nationally ranked. He's one of those. So I would imagine when he commits. That usually happens. There's a rehashing, but
there'll be a bump.
He looks like a guy because, yeah, he's fringe top 100 by 247, top 100 guy by ESPN. But yeah, listed.
Well, if you're a top 100 player, you're mm-hmm. a 4-star.
Right. Exactly. I mean, exactly. But yeah, listed at 6'3", 225. And no, I mean, with the track record Auburn's had with edge rushers, that's one where, you know, I'm curious to see how much they build into that through the high school ranks, because nowadays I think the transfer portal makes a lot of sense for a plug-and-pop kind of edge rusher. Mm-hmm. But if you can develop them, like, that's, you know, all the more to you, because you think about, I know Keldrick Falk was more of a D-end a lot of times, but, you know, that's a guy you had in-house. And, I mean, Derek Hall, you know, that was really one of the first. And, you know, Eku Leota, what do you remember about him? Do you remember much about him?
Yeah, well, he was one of the nicest guys.
Okay.
I mean, he was a great interview and a guy that was he was a workaholic.
Yeah.
Who, you know, I didn't think was maybe the most talented guy they had, but man, he was productive.
He was one of those ones who I think his numbers kind of fell short for the brief time that I covered him when he was here, but coming in, it was like, I think he had mm-hmm. a pretty good first year, and I think it was 21, and it was like, okay, like, this guy could take a step up, and I don't know that I ever really saw it, but no, it's just, that's a position where if Auburn can build out that well there in that way, like, that's a cool position to do it at. I'm always a little partial to that spot. I was a defensive end when I played tackle.
Oh, wow, a little undersized?
A little bit, no. And, I mean, I played a year and a half of high school ball. I did not last long. But when I played in middle school, we played 8-man. So I was, like, the fourth biggest guy on the team, which isn't saying much. But, no, it's just such a fun position. I just when all you have to do is just pin your ears back
and
go for the quarterback.
Try to get after him.
It's a blast. It's the best.
Crum is a safety mm-hmm. position where, man, Auburn, that's one of the most loaded positions, I think, on this upcoming squad for Auburn.
Yeah, the thing I do wonder about Crum before, I do want to touch on that, because we'll get to Auburn's current safeties in a minute, but Crum, too, I think is listed at 6 foot and 200 pounds. Mm-hmm. That's a guy who I wonder how much you look at him and think, okay, maybe we add some to this frame and there's
and
a little bit of
a linebacker?
Yeah, a linebacker, kind of that hybrid vibe. You've just got – that's a really primo kind of thing if you can have it this day and age, seems like. A guy who's technically a DB but is big enough that you can drop him into the box and play mm-hmm. more of a nickel sort of thing. But, no, I think that safety group, like, I think – is that – one of the most underrated positions on this team.
I think it's
got to
be. I mean, if people don't realize the talent and depth that Auburn has there at the position, I mean, you've got experience, you've got, a couple of, I think, supremely talented sophomores, mm-hmm. and new boy Fagans and Eric Winters.
Yeah. No, it's that youth. I mean, like, you've got – it's kind of like some of the youth we've seen with baseball, of those guys mm-hmm. who are – I mean, what? They're stepping into sophomore years, right? Which is crazy, because I feel like we've talked about them for a while. But, you know, two really premier pieces that, you know, you're really grateful you get to keep around for this coaching change. And, I mean, even – I go back a year ago, like, it maybe had the shelf life of days. But when Charles Kelly leaves, and that was the guy who recruited him here, you know, you're holding your breath a little bit, you know. You're not sure what's going to happen. But I think that was also when there were still two portal windows. But, no, those guys, if they can take that jump in the way that you'd expect them to, you unlock a whole nother level with that whole group.
But, I mean, when you get to the experience, you know, you hope Champ Anthony comes back 100%, but you've got a lot of experience there as well. You've got guys that could end up being nickels as well as the strong and free safety types.
Right. You know, I mean, you get Sly Smith back, and you've also got Caleb Harris too, who I think by the time it's all said and done, he might be one of the most he needs his flowers by the time it's all said and done at Auburn. That kid's been a starter since he was a true freshman, and he's just always been pretty reliable. You know, he's not flashy in a lot of pop, but I just remember him sticking out like a sore thumb in the best of ways his freshman year. Of okay, that kid's a freshman. Like he never looked it. You know, he always looked experienced.
And then the guy that I'm really intrigued by is Matthews.
Yeah.
Because when he came here, I remembered him, and he was really a player at Texas A&M when DJ was there. Now he hadn't even played football for a year and came in and sort of disappeared. And I think a lot of folks were surprised that he was even back this spring. But when we were out there watching practice, it's like he's getting a lot of work with the ones.
And he really briefly this offseason popped into the portal. It was like a day or two, and then eventually it was like, you know, it was announced that he was out of it. But there was some of that with the spring game where there were some guys who got held back at the safety spot. I mean, like I remember, not with the team anymore, I think medically retired, but Jack Luttrell was one of those guys. And so some of it was it seemed like a byproduct of maybe health that he got as many reps as he did, but still, I think he was tied for like the lead in tackles from the spring game, which however much stock you put into that. But yeah, I mean, if that's a guy who you can get back to, you know, kind of nearing the potential of the five-star talent he was as part of those Jimbo Fisher A&M classes, like that's a pretty nice addition if you can get it, you know? But I mean, those guys, how many of those guys are still playing college football? I wonder those guys from those Jimbo teams, you know,
question. Not many of them are there. Although, I mean, they've still got some talent.
Yeah, no, I mean, the job that Elko's done there has been tremendous. You know, he's just, it was like the antithesis of Fisher, it felt like, and they still managed to recruit at a Jimbo Fisher level. So,
well,
you know,
Texas A&M has the resources.
That's a good point. You know, it's Texas. There's oil and other things, you know, as we've learned. But yeah, no, that's a position group that I bet if it's a good year, I bet we look back on it and it's like, man, we did not talk about that safety group enough.
No, I mean, you know, everybody talks about the linebacker room, and rightfully so. Mm-hmm. But I think the safeties are right there with them, and that's a couple of huge steps. You know, as you look at the defense this coming year, corner. I mean, there's much less experience at the corner than there is at safety.
Which is so funny because it feels very similar to the corner rooms of the last 2 years.
It does.
Where you're like, oh, man, it's so young. They're really going to have to figure it out on the fly. And then you kind of got to the end of the year and you're like,
man, they played well. Yeah,
like you've got your guys now. Obviously, you know, Jay Crawford and Kay and Lee are not here anymore. But, you know, you've got Rayshon Pleasant and presumably Andre Jordan on the other side of him, your most experienced. And then after that,
it's a bunch of kids.
It's a bunch of kids. But, you know, Blake Woodby got plenty of reps last year. Shamar Arnaud is going to be fascinating because, you know, I mean, I remember what Golish kind of said about him earlier this year. If it's like when he's on, but you got to get him on, you know. And so I think they're figuring that out. But he's listed at 6'2", 189 and like runs like
it's great to have corners with that kind of length.
So yeah, no, it's a ton of youth, but no, it's you're lucky you're short up in the experience department with that safety room, because you've got a lot of youth that you're going to have to tap into out wide.
Yeah, and as you were saying, I mean, they've got a couple of guys there at safety that can cover well enough to be able to be that third corner or the nickel type.
Yeah, I think I'm very curious to see how he slots in with that rotation. But Fred Gaskin from South Florida, he was, I think he was one of two defenders who came over, him and Gavin Jenkins, who's a cornerback. But Gaskins was just a stuffer.
Cornerback with some length.
Yeah, Jenkins has got a lot of length. Didn't play much, I don't think, as a true freshman. I think he's a redshirt freshman.
He's a redshirt freshman, but he worked with the ones a good bit this spring as well.
Right. So there's another one, but Gaskin is just like, hey, you know, it was the sacks and the tackles for loss. The stuff he did in the backfield was as impressive as the numbers he put up defending the pass. And then he even, I think, had a few forced fumbles and fumble recovery kind of things. And to just have that kind of dynamic playmaker in your secondary, those are always massive.
All right. So while we're sort of on the subject, I mean, linebacker room, I think just about everybody has that as maybe the best group that Auburn has. Where would you sort of rank the different groups? What other rooms do you feel really good about? What's your biggest concern?
I mean, that upper echelon, like, I'd put linebacker up there, and I would put running back right there with it.
Got to.
If not above it, just based on what you have, based on the production.
Proven production.
On paper, and I mean, I'm so excited to see what this offense looks like. You know, you're going to see Byron Brown run the ball, but I just imagine you're probably trying to build it out through handing it off to the running backs to start, and you've just got so many that... You know, I mean, Golish has talked plenty of times this year about, you know, that offense, like, sure, you've got your core principles, but it changes with your personnel year over year. And I don't know that he's ever had a stable of running backs like this.
I don't know that many schools have consistently a room like this. But what's really interesting to me is how much we saw and heard about Omar Mapson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the newcomers coming in. Mm-hmm. Omar is a guy that I think is pushing for significant playing time.
I think, and you'd love to be able to see that, especially with just he's, you know, it feels lousy to make such a recent comparison, but I see a lot of Jarquez Hunter in him, and I think the biggest difference is he's just got somehow manages to have a lower center of gravity. Not that Jarquez wasn't built like a bowling ball and was the sort of muscle hamster that can run over guys, but Omar's got that same build, and if not, like, I think a little bigger, you know. I think you could probably – it's been a while since I've seen a fullback, but you could probably turn him into a fullback if you needed to his size.
You could, but, I mean, he's nimble enough,
exactly.
Too. And it was really surprising when Alex Golish said he was his best pass pro.
Yeah, no, especially because that was the thing that, at least allegedly, was holding him back from seeing the field last year.
Well, you think – I mean, here's a guy that should just be – starting his freshman year. Should have just finished his high school this past year, and he is now the best pass blocker that Auburn has among the running backs.
Right. If you can get him in there and get him off and rolling in the year two that should be year one, like, that's if you can build that up out of the running back room, that's another nifty place to have it. And I mean, Auburn's obviously had it. You know, they've had it long before I've been here of just the success at that position. But I think that might be their best. I really like – I don't know that there are anywhere I'm just like, well, it's not going to work out there. You just got to try your best and cobble it together. I think the biggest question mark to me, I know we've talked a lot about the O-line, but it's an exciting question mark, that tight end room. And I just think Justin Ferguson's written some really good stuff over at The Observer about that position group and the way that Golish talks about it. And
he really, I mean, you can tell He's a tight end guy.
And it's just these guys, you bring them in, like, I don't want to say you bring them all in as gadget guys, but, you know, they've got, in theory, a job to do. You've got a guy in Jake Johnson who's been here before, very experienced, can do all
of
it.
He's a proven receiver.
Yeah, can do all of it to a certain level. And then it's like, you know, if you can get Arliss Boardingham, I don't think played at Bowling Green last year with injury, but if you can get him back to what he was at Florida, you know, I mean, that's you've got a X factor in the passing game out there.
And then you've got a couple of youngsters from South Florida and Howard that are just really X. I mean, those guys are great-looking athletes. Let's find out.
I think Eccles is really – that's a guy I'd put on the short list of, okay, who makes a jump at Auburn this year. I think Eccles I would put right there. You know, because he was at South Florida, but he was committed to Golish at Tennessee and eventually decommitted from them and followed him over. Like, that's an SEC talent. And then Tre Newsome is just, I think the good news is you've got not only his former coach, but his former head coach overseeing him, but, like, just with the youth, like, you're going to have to build him up a little bit. But, you know, he was getting involved a good bit with that tight end group towards the top this offseason. But you see it, you know, he was, I think, a Michigan commit as an edge rusher at one point, and you watch him play, and it's kind of like, that guy looks like an edge rusher, you know, and more so in size, I will say, than anything. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got the ability out there to play tight end, but that's a guy who, if you can get that polished up, like, he's just, I don't know what the future holds, but it's interesting, whatever it is for him.
All right, we will get to our final break of the afternoon. Bill and Adam Cole, stick with us as we wrap things up.
Jonathan here.
The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final couple of minutes here on this Wednesday. Well, let's see. Coming up the rest of the week, I guess, yeah, U.S. Open is something that we'll be keeping an eye on. Man, the scores, you can't expect these to be low. I mean, I know you've seen the numbers that in the history of the U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills, there have only been three golfers that finished under par. That is amazing.
Ever?
Ever.
Ever. Because I will admit, like my dad watched golf all the time growing up. I'm terrible at it. Never really followed it much. Have started, you know, following it and getting more into practice with just everything Auburn's done. But that is, that can't be common. Surely.
No. Look, U.S. Open is generally going to be the toughest of the majors. And Shinnecock Hills is, they make it tougher.
Man.
So yeah, there have only been, even though I think the first open at Shinnecock Hills was 1896, there have only been five opens at Shinnecock Hills. But still, in five tournaments, three golfers have finished under par.
Unbelievable. Man, it'd make for a heck of an entrance for Jackson Koivin if he can make some noise in that vein.
And Logan Riley's really been playing well.
Absolutely. No. So should be a fun weekend then.
Adam, let everybody know once again how they can keep up with everything you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're just looking to go straight to the source, head to MontgomeryAdvertiser.com and click sports at the top, and you'll get a list of names, and click Auburn, and you'll have everything you need. And if you're looking for me on social media, whether that's Twitter, TikTok, just search my last name. That's C-O-L-E and the word reporter all together. And whether it's Twitter, TikTok, wherever, you'll be able to find me wherever you're looking for me.
Thanks again, man. Look forward to seeing you next week.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's going to do it for the Wednesday Drive. Justin Ferguson, we mentioned him a couple of times today. Ferg will be in tomorrow from the Auburn Observer, so hopefully you'll join us as well. That's going to do it for today. Have a good one, everybody. Oh, crap. Rain is coming down again. We are out of here.